everyone, and welcome to another episode of Presque Parisienne. I'm your co-host Kelly, and as usual, I'm joined by your other co-host, Lara.
Bonjour tout le monde. Today we're recording at Café Chez Pierre. We're doing two recordings at once because we're falling behind a little bit.
Today we're going to be exploring two quintessential aspects of Parisian / French culture, and it's the PMU and tabac. So I wanted to do this episode because these establishments are like everywhere, and I have like zero reason to go into them, but I'm like endlessly fascinated by them.
I can totally see why you're fascinated by them, Kelly, because so these places, they also exist in Turkey, but in such a different way than they are here. It took me forever to figure out what they are and how they work in a way. So what is a PMU? And what is a tabac? What I understand is that they're almost the same. Almost every PMU is a bar or café tabac. And almost every tabac is a PMU. Maybe, like, can you enlighten me on this?
So if you have a bar tabac, it's where you can buy your cigarettes, and there's obviously a bar at the side, you can do some gambling. But if it's a PMU, it's a very specific type of gambling that you can do, which is related to horse racing. And that's not in every bar tabac. That would be a tabac PMU.
Okay. Okay. That's a bit clearer.
I believe that is like how they're defined. But, you know, we'll get into a bit more about what we're talking about here and what different types of gambling you can do in each establishment.
Okay then, have at it. Give us some history.
As usual, let's kick things off with some history. So Paris, early 19th century, it was around 1870, the Paris Mutuel Betting was created when the French government legalised off-track betting on horse races. So the idea was to like centralise and regulate betting activities, and it led to the establishment of the now iconic PMU, the Paris Mutuel Urbain. So that was created in 1930. Initially solely focused on horse racing, it later expanded to include like sports betting in general, and it became like a cornerstone of like French gambling culture. So there are actually two different gambling bodies. So you have Le Française du Jeu, and that's the FDJ. That's for betting games and the lottery, and then you have the Paris Mutuel Urbain, which is the PMU, and that's for horse racing. And that's what I was talking about the distinction in both, just at the top of the episode.
Okay, because I looked into the Française des Jeux, the FDJ, they operated the national lottery in France since the 30s. So over that time, it has gone through like various name changes. And I thought it was still government-owned, but it went public in 2018. In fact, France was the nation that initiated Europe to join together and launch the EuroMillions.
Okay.
Did you know that? Starting with Spain and the UK. In 2004, another six countries joined, and France was given the management of it.
Oh, right, okay. I did not know that that's where the EuroMillions came from.
Yeah, me neither, but I researched and I was like, oh, okay, interesting. Fun fact. We're such geeks.
So, Delara, question. Have you ever gone into a PMU?
Yes, of course I have.
Yes.
So, in Turkey, we have a tekel shop where you go and buy cigarettes, alcohol and groceries. So as I told you, it took me forever to find out this shop actually translates to an épicerie in France. However, in épiceries, you can't get cigarettes in France, except for those who sell you cigarettes under the counter. Then in Turkey, there are ganyan shops, which is the actual translation of PMU, where you go bet on horses and in some other lottery games maybe, so just like FDJ. In Turkey, in these places, you don't get served like a bar, so that's where the difference comes in. Here, in France, these PMUs are almost like a dive bar, so if you go super early in the morning, you'll find the regulars there who are either drinking coffee, but also alcohol, like even hard liquor.
Yeah.
They're the regulars, though. They're not judged, especially by the owners. I was so shocked when I first saw this. It was back in 2019, I think, and I remember so vividly. And I remember like wanting to write a short story about these places.
Okay.
There's the bar counter, it has such a distinctive look to it. There's the guichet, where the cashier stands, and behind them are the boxes of cigarettes, if it's a tabac. And in front of them are the cards for betting, and some of these places serve food, like breakfast, lunch, and even dinner. You know, in the UK or Scotland, there are pubs that serve alcohol but not food.
Yeah.
You'd go there to grab a pint. I'd say if you're new in Paris or a tourist, treat these places like a dodgy pub.
Yes.
And go and have a drink, because they have an interesting ambiance.
Yeah. So, like, as I said, like, you know, I'm fascinated by these places, and I actually think it's maybe partly to do with my upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
So I spoke before in our strikes and protests episode that my father was a miner. So I was raised in a very working class, very masculine environment, lots of working men's clubs and things like that. Betting horse racing was something that I was introduced to when I was a child. I would help my dad and my uncle pick horses for like the big races, like the Grand National and stuff.
Oh wow.
Now, I would only do this like based on like the jockey's jersey, if it had like a pretty colour, or sometimes if the horse's name was like fun or funny or made me laugh in some way, you know. By no means was I looking at odds or anything like that, you know, it was just very basic child stuff. So where I grew up, there was betting shops on the high street. They don't exist anymore, and they were kind of exactly like what PMUs actually are now. And I can't help but feel a bit of nostalgia when I go into them. Like,
yeah.
there's these old men with their racing sheets, you know, they're shouting at the telly and trying to get their horse to win, and like, you know, also like the beer's super cheap.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, these places are like kind of old and dark, and they're kind of wood everywhere. And right now, according to Le Figaro and other news outlets from the past few days, the PMU have announced that they're trying to improve their image to attract like a younger clientele. Dallara, are they really trying to gentrify the PMUs?
Oh my god, Kelly, I totally forgot to tell you. But when I was researching for this episode, I found an article on this. Yes, it's exactly what they're trying to do. There's this new phenomenon, which is called PMU version 2.
Version 2?
It's a new thing, apparently, that started in the summer of like 2023, so like 6 months ago. PMUs with like natural wine and platters to share, but they're keeping the same look of a PMU with the round tables and all. And you know what? In 2013, I got one of those tables for my apartment the minute I arrived to Paris. I'm such a bobo, seeing the value. And now you see, in 11 years, they became valuable.
Yeah.
Although I sold it. So, yeah.
I can imagine like they're going to gentrify PMUs. They're going to be all over Instagram, and there'll be people going like, guys, I just found this amazing place called a PMU. And you're like, yeah, they've been around for a while. They're just a bit fancier now that you want to go into them, you know. So I went online actually to see how to bet on a race, because even though, you know, I used to pick horses, like I literally know nothing about horse racing. But I did find a video from the PMU. It's on YouTube, I'll put a link to it if you're interested, which kind of talks you through how to place a bet. So I think what I'm going to go and do is, my local PMU is not far from here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go and I'm going to place a bet, or I'm going to play the lottery, and I'll let you all know how I got on.
Maybe you'll become a billionaire.
On one horse race?
Yes.
How much am I going to bet?
Dream big, Kelly. I keep telling you every single episode. My main concern when we started like talking about the PMU and horse racing and betting was really the welfare of the animals. I looked and I found this site which is called France Gallop, which is an FAQ about how the animals are treated and how the races are regulated. It looks pretty well regulated, to be honest. And I'm definitely no saint in this. I really had no idea you had the same background as I did. Because, yes, I used to bet on horses in Turkey during my adolescence. Not as a child, but during my adolescence years up until, like, my mid-20s. I used to even go to the hippodrome, pretending I'm some kind of, like, a woman version of Charles Bukowski. And the atmosphere there is one of a kind. You drink rakı, you eat mezes. It's not high class at all.
Right.
So, not PMU, but it's definitely not high class. My current stand on this is that horses are not to be ridden, not to be competed in races. But again, like, we just did the pets episode. I became quite sensitive on these topics about animals ever since I adopted my cat, Neptune.
You know, I agree, like, and, you know, this site does confirm that the horses working in the racing industry are being well-treated, like, throughout their entire lives. Does that mean that we have to race them for profit? Well, no, of course it doesn't. But as long as gambling exists, it is reassuring to know that these animals are being properly cared for.
At the very least, yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm glad this thing exists to regulate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So... So let's move on to the tabas. Like, I want to start at the smoking culture and the cliches. So tell us, Dilara, do the French smoke a lot?
So we have mentioned smoking a few times on previous episodes. I'm also a smoker. You used to be a smoker before. Compared to the Turkish, French smoke less, I think. There's even a French saying, "Fumer comme un Turc," which means smoking like a Turk. So smoking a lot. But yeah, do you think the French smoke more than the Scots?
It's kind of really hard to tell. I actually don't know. I don't even know the figures, but I think the terrace culture here makes it easier for people to sit outside and smoke more than in Scotland because it's raining all the time. So yeah. just from that, I'm just going to extrapolate that the French might smoke more than the Scots, but I literally have no idea.
Yeah, that's fine, but it is true that French people smoke quite a lot. It is very common to see people smoking in terraces, as you just mentioned. Mm. Which American tourists tend to complain about. I also think smoking is a bit romanticized here, as it's seen like some kind of a rebellious and part of like a boho lifestyle, deeply rooted in art and culture. Because like French movies, when you watch them, you always see smokers. Mm. And I found a source, 7 out of 10 new French films show people smoking. And it's like new French films, not the old classics or the Nouvelle Vague films.
Yeah.
Should it be banned? That was a discussion in the source that I saw video. It's really nice, actually. Mm. As much of a socialist I am, I tend to be quite liberal when it comes to these kind of regulations. Banning the advertisements, yes, okay. But banning people smoking in film, absolutely not. Mm. Because I'll give you an example. In Turkey, I remember this happening progressively. It started with putting a small flower icon on the cigarette of the actors and actresses smoking on the street. And then they started doing the same for alcohol. Then they started cutting and editing these scenes out, as well as people like having sex. And now people cannot kiss on the screen either. So it's edited out. Even if it's like a foreign film, they edit it out.
Whoa.
So progressively.
It's just like utter censorship of all this stuff.
Exactly. So, but it started with cigarettes.
Yeah. I can't imagine how weird that would look watching a film and then just like a flipper. Icon, it would be so distracting.
It like, is. You don't understand what happened.
What is that on my screen? Is that my TV?
I mean, like, imagine a scene they just had sex and next day they're talking about they're having the talk. Uh-huh. Are we like couple or not?
Yeah.
But you didn't see the sex scene, so how do you know?
So, like, at the moment, the French government is seen as being a little bit complacent when it comes to smoking and its effects on the public and the economy. Tobacco, obviously it's regulated, and I'll put a link to some figures, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go into how many people in France smoke, etc.,
yeah.
Right? But critics and anti-smoker campaigns like want the government to do more, as they always do, okay?
Yeah.
The government's never doing enough to be anti-smoking. On the other hand, the government has to support the sales of tobacco and stop these tabas that we're just about to look at in detail.
Yeah.
They have to stop these from dying out, right? So because they're so ingrained in French culture right now and are very important in like smaller towns and smaller communities throughout the whole country, you can see that the government right now has a bit of a problem on its hands. Like, how can it try and stop people from smoking but still maintain
the businesses
that are trying to sell the cigarettes? I mean, that's a conundrum.
In France, smoking has been banned in enclosed public spaces like restaurants, bars, cafes since 2007. Same thing has happened in Turkey, and as a smoker, I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they made the changes in packaging to be black and neutral, and the prices have significantly increased. And all of these had an impact on the number of smokers nationwide dropping. Although, like, I don't know if there is a direct link there.
Okay.
So as a smoker, I've done the medical test and I'm a hand addict, no sexual jokes please, which means that I'm addicted to the hand gesture of smoking a cigarette and I don't even inhale it. I've been smoking ever since I'm 14 years old. Mm-hmm. I don't inhale the smoke. I'm the most difficult type to quit smoking, according to doctors. But I made myself the promise of quitting when I turned 40, so in a year and a half. For me, these marketing stuff doesn't really make a difference. It's all about the price, honestly. And since I travel so frequently, I get my cigarettes at a reduced rate at duty free, or I ask my friends to do like bring me cigarettes from the duty free. Let's keep that in, even though maybe it's illegal. Honestly, the only time I bought my own cigarettes at a bar was during the pandemic because like I couldn't travel.
Yeah.
And that had a big impact on my budget.
Okay, so let's talk about tabas. Please notice the pronunciation, it's pronounced ta-ba. The C is silent.
Yeah.
You will never be a Parisian if you pronounce the C. Thank you very much. So these tabas aren't just about selling cigarettes and cigars, okay? They're also your go-to spot for like stamps. Lottery tickets sold by the FDG, which we've talked about. You can go in there for a quick espresso shot if you want. And some are connected to a brasserie where you can have like a beer. Places like this just don't exist in Scotland. Over there, everyone just buys their cigarettes at the supermarket or the petrol station or at a corner shop. So yeah. This is not a thing over there.
Same in Turkey. Yeah.
So, little bit of history.
Well, as usual.
So, tobacco arrived in France in the 16th century thanks to a guy called Jean Nicot. And that's where we get the word nicotine, interestingly enough.
Oh, okay.
So in 1674, King Louis XIV saw a tax opportunity and he granted a monopoly on tobacco sale and manufacture to the French government. And today the tabacs are still controlled by the state. The first Bureau de Tabac, which is what they're called, was opened in 1716. The vendors are called Burelistes.
Oh.
And by 1970, there were nearly 49,000 bureaux in France, and today they're around 28,000.
Well, I guess the drop in that number, in a way, shows like people buy less cigarettes.
Yes.
I don't know. Again, there's no direct link, but I'm just making this assumption. Interesting. It really like is half now. Okay.
So a more recent bit of history, I found some articles dating back to 2005, which speak of a kind of a major sociological shift in Paris and France, and that is that Chinese entrepreneurs were buying up bar tabacs and taking over the ownership. So around a quarter of Paris's bar tabacs at the moment are now run by Chinese owners, as original proprietors move out of what they saw at the time as being a dying business.
Okay.
So you've just noticed that it's half the amount now exists, so clearly they moved out for that.
But it's a business opportunity for the immigrants.
Exactly. So French Chinese nationals who, as you say, originally arrived here as immigrants, they moved out of the Chinese restaurant business, which was situated in Paris mostly in the 13th arrondissement, because they found that to be like too much competition. And they bought up the bar tabac business, whose original owners didn't want to work like really long hours for more decreasing profits. Interestingly, the person who holds a tobacco and alcohol license has to stay on the premises the whole time during business hours, and it could be up to like 13 hours a day.
This is exactly why people say immigrants are stealing our jobs. Well, the jobs, but nobody else wants to do.
I'm going to put links to two stories, one from the Taipei Times and one from the New York Times, which tell the stories of this takeover. One of them is actually a story of a specific guy called Quan, who in 2005 bought over a tabac down near the Seine. So that was like 20 years ago. I wonder if he's still there.
We should go check out. Say hi.
So you can easily find a tabac on the street by their distinctive sign outside. It's like an elongated diamond now. Traditionally, it was in the shape of a carrot, so it's called the carrot. It was because when tobacco was packaged and sold, it was really hard and packed together into the shape of a carrot, and you had to grate it yourself to get to the tobacco. These street signs are now like a present on nearly every single street in France.
Yeah. When you step into a tabac in Paris, you're not just entering a shop, I would say. You're stepping into a place where masculinity mingles with tradition.
Yep.
So let's maybe discuss what makes tabac such masculine spaces.
Okay.
So historically, they have been associated with masculinity, dating back to their origins in the 17th century. Oh, look at me giving historical facts, just like Kelly. So picture this. The French gentlemen puffing on their pipes, engaged in lively discussions about politics, literature, and the affairs of the day. So tabac, in a way, became hubs for intellectual exchange and social interaction, predominantly frequented by men. However, I think it's essential to acknowledge that tabas aren't exclusively masculine spaces. While they may have historical roots in like male-dominated social circles, women are increasingly seen in tabas, enjoying a cigarette or indulging in a cup of coffee. In fact, on 8th of March, 2024, it was announced that the FDJ has signed up a partnership with the Umai app. This app was created to provide safety when you go out and about, including places and safe spaces from street harassment. This wasn't met with enthusiasm from everyone, with critics saying these spaces are male dominated and women could be at more risk. So.
Yeah, I for this one, I do kind of see where the critics are coming from. The tabas that I know of, like, are overwhelmingly masculine spaces. And if you're a woman who's just been harassed on the street, are you gonna go to a really masculine space to get away from it? Because it can be a very intimidating environment.
Yeah, you know, in a way, yes, I agree with you. Also, like, okay, these initiatives are good and they're well thought, maybe, like, yeah, having an app to report like you're being harassed, like you need a safe space or whatever. However, I believe it's better if the security system, the police departments, work better when actually women went to commissariat to make a complaint. Mm. And like, what happens if I signal it on the app?
Yeah.
What's gonna happen after that? Mm. If the police is not taking me seriously, which is most of the time the case,
mm,
then what's the follow-up after the app?
Yeah.
You know, things, if there was enough rules and regulations around controlling these things, we wouldn't actually need the app.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, but we're only working with what society can give us at the moment, you know. So it's like, this app, what I liked about it was that it kind of tracks what I liked and disliked. I don't like having my location tracked anyway,
mm-hmm,
but you can tell your friends where you are. You know, if you do go into one of these like quote unquote safe spaces, then stay there. You can say, this is exactly where I am, and
mm-hmm,
have people come around you and make sure that you are safe. Because yes, of course, there's never enough getting done by the police to help women who are being harassed on the street. This, I think, is a good thing. I'm just not really sure that working with the FDJ, I get why it's a good thing for them to do that, but the actual spaces themselves fundamentally don't seem that safe for women in the first place. That's kind of my point.
I'm wondering, being a conspiracist or whatever that's called.
Uh-huh, conspiracy theorist.
Yes. You know when brands are greenwashing?
Yeah.
Or pinkwashing with LGBT issues. Maybe FDJ is not like feminine washing. They're
okay.
A brand trying to bring this in.
Right. Well, that's...
I'm so clever.
You've cracked it.
I've cracked it.
It's a cynical way to look at it, but we're only cynical about things like this because we know that this is what happens, you know? So yeah, maybe it's a publicity thing for the FDJ for doing
mm-hmm.
that, you know? But maybe the intention is a good thing. And if there are more safe spaces, then isn't that just going to be a good thing anyway, regardless?
Yeah, definitely.
I want to go back and just like kind of talk about the history of when you're talking about the French gentlemen. You said like they were puffing on their pipes and talking
mm-hmm.
about politics and literature. Yeah, no, that's tabas are not like that these days.
No, not at all.
The tabas just up the road there, I've seen like probably about two fights since I've lived here, and yeah, I don't see much political intellectual debate going on. It's like, let's debate with our fists.
It's very masculine.
It is.
Yeah. Small dick energy again.
So there it is. That's our chat about the PMU and the tabas of Paris. They are literally woven into the fabric of this city. Whether you want to place a bet at the PMU or get a pack of smokes, these are they're just a vital part of Parisian life. We couldn't not do an episode about them. If you are visiting Paris, go into one, like, for sure, and just enjoy a nice slice of French culture. Dilara, do we have an appropriate quote for this?
I did my best. It's from Oscar Wilde. You must have a cigarette. A cigarette is the perfect type of perfect pleasure. It is exquisite and it leaves one unsatisfied. What more can one want? So poetic.
So poetic. Oscar Wilde cementing that, you know, yes, cigarettes are addictive. You will never be satisfied with just one.
Mm-mm. I wonder what he died from.
What Oscar Wilde died from?
From cigarettes?
I'm sure we can find out.
He was only 46 when he died. Meningitis.
Oh, really?
Following an acute ear infection. Anyway, we're really going at this.
We are slightly off topic.
Yes.
So, that's our PMU episode. We will see you in 2 weeks' time.
Thank you, everyone. And as a public service announcement, cigarettes are bad for your health. It's an addiction. Stop smoking. Au revoir.
Ciao.